So, what is the difference between like a really high-performing visionary and someone who's just constantly stuck in a rut? Isn't talent
Right.
or luck or even having the right resources? What if it's literally just the exact words they use when their alarm goes off in the morning?
I mean, it sounds completely absurd when you put it like that.
It really does. But the biggest roadblock in your life is actually invisible, and you likely put it there yourself without even noticing. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are jumping right in to help you spot these hidden mental traps that, seem totally harmless, but are quietly dictating your entire trajectory.
Yeah, because it's incredibly easy to self-sabotage under the guise of being rational.
Oh, absolutely.
We build these really intricate, logical arguments in our heads to justify our actions, fully believing we are making objective choices. But under the hood, we are often just desperately trying to protect our own egos.
From the discomfort of actual accountability.
Exactly.
And to expose exactly how we do this, we are exploring some groundbreaking work by Puru. You might know him as Puru the Guru online.
Yeah, his stuff is fascinating.
It is. He has essentially isolated this microscopic flaw in human logic, a tiny linguistic loophole that we literally all fall through.
Every single one of us.
But Puru argues that if you can identify this flaw, and just seal it up, the compounding gains in your life are massive. And the beauty of this is that it requires absolutely zero outside intervention. You can fix this entirely on your own.
Because the entire foundation of Puru's thesis really comes down to an incredibly sharp distinction between two concepts we normally just treat as synonyms.
Right.
He states it very simply: a reason explains, an excuse forgives.
Okay, let's unpack this because I feel like we need to get into the weeds here. What is the actual functional difference there?
Yeah, that's the core of it.
Because in everyday conversation, if I give you a reason for why I did something or an excuse for why I did something, people generally just treat those as the exact same thing.
And that blending is exactly where the trap springs. According to Puru, a reason is simply the mechanical explanation of why an event occurred.
Like just stating the facts.
Right. It can be incredibly flimsy. It can even be totally manipulative. It just details the sequence of events. But a true excuse, an excuse requires rigorous scrutiny.
Has to hold up.
Exactly. If something is a valid excuse, it means the behavior is genuinely justified. It holds up under an objective, moral, or logical microscope, thereby granting actual forgiveness.
So if we look at just a daily scenario, say you are meeting a friend for coffee and you show up like 30 minutes late, you walk in, shrug, and say, I overslept again.
Right, cult classic.
That is a reason. You were explaining the biological mechanics of why you were tardy. But it definitely doesn't justify wasting 30 minutes of your friend's life.
Precisely. Oversleeping is the reason, but it completely fails the test of being a valid excuse.
Yeah.
Yet, because society is generally polite, your friend probably just sighs and says, "Oh, it's fine." We constantly accept flimsy reasons as if they were valid excuses simply because no laws were broken.
Which creates so many systemic problems.
Oh, it really does. And Puru points out how prevalent this is in the commercial world, too. Think about the last time you were sitting at an airport gate, totally exhausted.
Oh, I hate this part.
Right. And the loudspeaker crackles to life to announce your flight is delayed due to the late arrival of the incoming flight.
Which is just the most infuriating announcement to hear when you just want to get home.
Completely.
But when you view it through Puru's lens, I suddenly understand why it's so frustrating. The airline is offering a mechanical reason. Like the physical plane is not here.
Yes.
And they are serving it to you as if it grants them total moral forgiveness for failing at their own scheduling and logistics.
They are handing you a reason dressed up in an excuse's clothing. And what's fascinating here is that this isn't just a cultural habit, it is literally baked into the evolution of human communication.
Wait, really? Like language itself.
Yeah. Puru notes that while English has two distinct words for these concepts, if you look at many other languages, there often isn't a readily available distinct word for excuse that implies the higher level of moral justification.
Wow. So if you don't even have the vocabulary to separate a mechanical explanation from a moral justification, your brain just lumps them together by default.
It creates a dangerous linguistic blending. It actively discourages what Puru calls meta-thinking.
Which is thinking about our thinking.
Exactly. It's that vital practice of analyzing our own thought processes. He actually references Ayn Rand's observation here.
The quote about thinking.
Yeah, that the refusal to think is evil. When we rely on this blended binary language, we avoid the difficult, nuanced thinking required to evaluate our own actions.
Right.
You just grab the nearest plausible reason and declare ourselves forgiven.
But wait, if I offer a reason that I know deep down doesn't actually justify my behavior, isn't that basically just a socially acceptable form of lying to myself?
Oh, it is absolute internal deception. But we don't do it because we are inherently malicious. We do it because of our biological hardwiring. Puru traces the root cause of this deception back to human evolution, specifically to what he calls the unholy trinity.
The unholy trinity, which, just to be clear, are primal instincts, right?
Yes.
The drive to avoid pain, the drive to seek pleasure, and the paramount need to conserve energy.
Everything we do is filtered through those three primal directives. And Puru explains that falling into the reason not excuse trap is actually a two-stage failure driven entirely by this trinity.
Okay, what's stage one?
Stage one is the behavioral failure. You choose a suboptimal action like deciding to scroll on your phone instead of going to the gym.
Been there.
We all have. And you do this to seek the immediate pleasure of dopamine and avoid the short-term physical pain of a workout.
I think we're all pretty intimately familiar with stage one, but stage two is where the self-deception actually locks in, right?
Yeah, stage two is the mental failure. Now that you've skipped the gym, your brain needs to resolve the cognitive dissonance.
Because you feel bad about it.
Exactly. But constructing a valid, rigorous justification for why you skip the gym requires deep, nuanced thought.
Which burns energy.
A massive amount of calories. It violates the third rule of the unholy trinity, which is to conserve energy. So to save energy, your brain grabs the flimsiest, easiest reason available. Like, oh, I had a long day at work. I need to rest my nervous system.
So our brain is basically acting like a cheap, overworked lawyer.
I love that.
It's just settling for the easiest, flimsiest defense just to get its client out of the courtroom and save energy, completely ignoring whether actual justice was served.
That is the perfect analogy. And this overworked lawyer lives in the amygdala.
The primitive part of the brain.
Right, the part that operates on fast, binary shortcuts for survival. Deep, rigorous self-reflection requires the prefrontal cortex, which is much slower and incredibly energy hungry.
Which is why we avoid using it when we're tired.
Exactly. As Puru eloquently puts it, evolution gave us speed, but progress demands depth.
And we are training these cheap lawyers from the moment we are born. Puru talks about early childhood programming in his work, too.
He does.
He mentions how an exhausted parent, you know, just trying to conserve their own energy, will give a toddler a flimsy reason just to stop a tantrum.
Because I said so.
Yeah. And the child accepts it, conserving their own energy, and a neural pathway is formed right there. Puru has this chilling line. He says, weak logic taught early becomes weak logic lived later.
We carry that exact same energy-saving deception right into adulthood. We spare our egos the pain of accountability today, but we completely bankrupt our potential for the future.
Okay, that is terrifying when you realize it is happening inside your own internal monologue.
It really is.
But what happens when that cheap, overworked lawyer gets promoted and put in charge of entire industries? Like, how does this biological laziness scale up?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the architecture of societal decline becomes startlingly clear. When you take the unholy trinity, that primal urge to avoid pain and conserve energy, and you multiply it by millions of people and then institutionalize it within corporations, it transforms into systemic harm.
Let's walk through some of the macro examples Puru lays out in his work. Because looking at this purely through his framework, you can see how heavily this impacts our daily lives.
Oh, everywhere.
Starting with financial products. Puru argues that a lot of corporate greed is hidden right out in the open behind flimsy reasons.
Yeah, his take on health insurance is wild.
It is. He claims we shouldn't even call it health insurance. He says it's actually DAFER, D-A-F-E-R, Disease and Accident Financial Expense Reduction.
It is such a brilliant reframe. The industry offers the reason that these products help with medical bills.
Which is true mechanically.
Right, it's a mechanical reason. But it is not a valid excuse to misrepresent the product as actually ensuring health. True health is an internal state of wealth built by daily lifestyle choices.
But acknowledging that requires effort.
Exactly. Calling financial hedging health insurance is a flimsy reason that masks a massive transfer of wealth. It appeals directly to our desire to avoid the pain of actually maintaining our own bodies.
Which bleeds perfectly into his critique of the entire medical system.
Yeah.
You know, pitting sick care against health care.
This one is huge.
Doctors are constantly pressured to treat symptoms with a quick prescription. And the reason they give, they say, well, that's what the patient wants.
And they are right. The patient does want the magic pill.
To avoid the pain of lifestyle changes.
It serves the unholy trinity for both parties. The doctor conserves the massive energy it would take to educate and enforce lifestyle changes. And the patient avoids the pain of discipline.
Wow.
But Puru argues that giving the patient what they want is a flimsy reason that completely fails as an excuse for running a system that manages disease for profit rather than actually curing it.
He even points the lens at cultural traditions, which is super interesting. Mm-hmm. Specifically looking at Ayurveda, he notes that people will consume heavy, saturated fats like ghee or coconut oil, and their primary justification is simply, it is our ancestral tradition.
And look, ancestral wisdom can be incredibly valuable.
Right.
But Puru's point is that citing tradition alone is merely a reason. It is not a valid excuse without empirical scientific justification.
Especially today.
Especially when you overlay ancient dietary practices onto a modern, highly sedentary lifestyle. Relying on tradition is just a mental shortcut to avoid the rigorous work of scientific validation.
And Puru scales this framework all the way up to global politics. Now, just to be completely clear for you listening, we are strictly reporting Puru's specific viewpoints here, not endorsing any political side.
Right, we're just outlining his argument.
But he observes that right-wing nationalist movements often rely heavily on the creation of an enemy as a reason for their policies.
Because fear of an enemy speaks directly to the amygdala.
It bypasses logic.
Exactly. It triggers that survival instinct, instantly bypassing the prefrontal cortex. The reason offered is protecting the nation, but under Puru's scrutiny, that reason rarely holds up as a valid moral excuse for infringing on rights or maintaining an unjust status quo.
It's a mechanism to consolidate power.
Right, by exploiting the population's primal fear.
And finally, he looks at the health influencers and medical professionals who advocate for drinking alcohol in moderation.
This is a controversial one.
It is, because the scientific consensus pretty much points to zero being the only truly safe limit. So why do experts tell people a glass of wine is fine?
Because challenging deeply entrenched cultural norms causes immense social friction.
People don't want to hear it.
No, they don't. Telling the truth is painful. So professionals use moderation as a flimsy reason to avoid that pain, which ultimately just serves the alcohol and pharmaceutical industries.
Okay, I am thoroughly unsettled.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is.
Yeah.
Because if our own biology sets us up to lie to ourselves and society scales those lies into massive institutions, are we just doomed? Like, how do we actually fight back against our own brain's wiring?
Well, we fight back by closing the gap. Puru provides a very rigorous, practical action plan to rewire this exact mechanism.
Okay, good.
And it begins by setting an uncompromising target benchmark for yourself. A lifetime of entirely valid reasons, meaning true, scrutinized excuses and absolutely zero invalid ones.
Zero.
Zero. He says, even if you only manage to hit silver, you have to wake up every day striving for the gold.
And the first step to hitting that benchmark is developing what he calls hypervigilance.
Yes.
You literally have to train yourself to catch that cheap lawyer mid-sentence. You have to notice the flimsy phrases before they fully leave your mouth.
Like what?
Things like, oh, I forgot, or I was not aware, or the absolute classic, I just didn't have time.
And to fuel that vigilance, Puru introduces a concept he calls purunoia.
Purunoia. I love that term.
It's great. It is essentially the cultivation of a healthy, productive fear of long-term negative consequences.
Okay.
Before you accept an internal justification, purunoia forces you to pause and ask yourself, is the decision I am about to make coming from a place of courage, or is it coming from fear, weakness, and the desire to conserve energy?
Man, that demands brutal intellectual honesty.
Brutal!
Which means you really have to ditch the limiting labels we all hide behind. We say things like, well, I'm just not a morning person, or I'm not the gym type.
Those aren't biological truths.
Right. They're just energy-saving labels.
Right.
Puru says you have to replace those with non-negotiables. He says keep the bar low so you don't fail. Anchor them in the daily process rather than some distant outcome, but you never, ever break them.
That is how you close the implementation gap.
Which is what, exactly.
Well, the problem usually isn't that we don't know what to do. The problem is the massive gap between our knowledge and our execution.
What?
You have to change the internal script from I cannot to I still will. And Puru anchors this in the said principle from physiology, SAID, specific adaptation to imposed demands.
Okay, let's make sure we really grasp that.
Yeah.
How does a principle used by weightlifters apply to my internal monologue?
The said principle dictates that biological systems adapt specifically to the stress placed upon them. If you lift heavy weights, your muscles adapt by growing stronger.
Right.
Puru argues the brain works the exact same way. If you impose the psychological stress of holding a strict boundary and refusing to accept a flimsy reason, your neural pathways will physically adapt to that demand.
It makes intellectual honesty your new default state.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because Puro advocates for accelerating this adaptation through something called voluntary hormetic shocks.
Yes.
Doing highly uncomfortable things on purpose, like forcing yourself to take a freezing cold shower. But I have to push back here.
Go for it.
Are you really telling me that shivering in a cold shower in the morning is somehow going to rewire my brain to stop making excuses during a stressful meeting at 3 p.m.?
Yeah.
Because that feels like a massive leap.
It sounds extreme, I know. But the neurological mechanism is incredibly sound.
Hmm.
Remember, the unholy trinity is constantly begging you to avoid pain.
Yeah.
Your amygdala views the cold shower as a literal threat to your comfort. By voluntarily turning that handle to cold and stepping in, you are intentionally microdosing pain.
Oh, wow.
You are overriding the cheap lawyer. You are actively training your central nervous system that discomfort is not a threat. It is just a sensation that you can survive.
So it builds up a tolerance.
Exactly. The less frequently you allow a flimsy reason to rescue you from the cold water, the less power those flimsy reasons will have over you when the stakes are actually high at work or in your relationships. You are building psychological calluses.
You are proving to yourself that you don't melt when things get hard. And to keep track of all this proof, Puru strongly recommends journaling. He points out that while fools fail to learn from their own mistakes, the wise learn from the mistakes of others.
It's so true.
And journaling provides a massive RTI return on time invested.
Journaling forces you to slow down the prefrontal cortex and actually scrutinize your thoughts. It creates a literal paper trail of your internal lawyer's arguments.
You can't escape it.
No, it is very hard to hide behind a flimsy, energy-saving excuse when you are staring at it written in black and white on the page. It makes you what Puru calls a consistency conqueror.
So if I am practicing hypervigilance and I've got a healthy dose of Purunoia, I'm adapting to the stress of hormetic shocks and I'm tracking it all in a journal.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this actually lead?
Like, what's the end game?
Yeah, what is the ultimate payoff for putting myself through all this discomfort?
The ultimate payoff is a radical shift in how you view time and success, which Puru frames around two distinct concepts, patience and greed.
Greed.
Yes, but he is advocating for a very specific type of greed, long-term greed.
Long-term greed. I really love that reframing. It is shifting your focus away from the short-term convenience of hitting the snooze button and entirely toward capital preservation and the compounding growth of your internal wealth.
Exactly. And when you string enough of those long-term courageous choices together, you enter what Puru calls the virtuous spiral to superhuman.
Superhuman, that's a big word.
It is. We tend to look at the elite performers in our society, you know, the top CEOs, elite athletes, visionary artists, and we assume they were handed some superhuman genetic gift.
Right, like they're just built different.
But Puru argues that the people who achieve superhuman status are simply ordinary people who ruthlessly stopped providing flimsy reasons. They steadily progress to a rare state where their lives contain almost zero invalid excuses.
They just refuse to let the cheap lawyer speak.
Totally.
And when you live like that, it naturally bleeds into true leadership. Because, as Puru points out, leadership isn't a title someone hands you.
No, it's not.
It is a behavior you demonstrate. When you consistently choose the harder right over the easier wrong, you automatically invite everyone around you, your kids, your friends, your colleagues, to step up and do the same. Doing the right thing, especially when it is painful and costs you energy, actually lights the path for everyone else.
This raises an important question for you to consider about your own life. Are you walking around claiming the mantle of leadership simply because of a job title or your position in your family?
It's a tough question.
It is. Or are you truly demonstrating leadership through the silent, rigorous choices you make every day? Are your daily actions drawing a map for others to follow? Or are your flimsy, unspoken excuses quietly giving everyone around you permission to quit?
So what does this all mean? If we distill the core of the guru's thesis today, you can never mistake a reason for an excuse.
Never.
Accepting your own weak justifications, which are driven by your brain's primal urge to avoid pain and conserve energy, completely short-circuits your potential. But the incredible news is you hold the power to fix it.
You absolutely do.
By practicing hypervigilance, by embracing the intentional discomfort of a cold shower, and by applying Purinoya to your daily decisions, you can rewrite your entire trajectory.
And as we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. If a true excuse requires rigorous, objective scrutiny to be valid, what would happen tomorrow morning if you ruthlessly audited the silent explanations you give yourself in your own internal monologue?
Wow.
What deeply held truths about your own identity might instantly unravel, and what incredible foundation could you build in their place?
That is a wildly powerful question. Just imagine what happens when you step out of your own way, completely dismantle those invisible obstacles, and permanently fire that cheap lawyer in your brain. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. If you found Puru's insights valuable, please pass them along to someone who might need to hear them. Until next time, stay curious and be ruthlessly honest with yourself.